This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Welcome back, everybody. This week, I am talking with Lindsay Whitehurst. She covers the Supreme Court, legal affairs, and criminal justice for the Associated Press in Washington, D.C. We've just been talking a little bit before we started recording, and I'm so excited about this conversation. As listeners of the podcast know, I love everything SCOTUS related, and who better than somebody who is dedicated to covering this and other legal issues. So, Lindsay, welcome.
Thank you.
Lindsay, tell us if you can, because I think we're all thinking about a variety of issues, whether it be political or social. What are the big cases that we are looking at this particular term? I know last term, obviously, it was the immunity decision, likely the biggest one. This term, what are the so-called blockbusters that we should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, this term hasn't had quite as many blockbusters, although those might be, you know, hopefully last term we came up on some of the bigger historical ones, so it's a little bit hard to compare. But this term, where I think probably the biggest one that has been argued, we're waiting on a decision on, has to do with transgender rights in healthcare, specifically for minors, whether minors can access gender affirming care. That one was argued that we're waiting for an opinion there. That's probably the one that really ties into a lot of the biggest issues that we're working with as a society right now, right? And as a country, especially the incoming Trump administration, it was a big issue on the campaign trail for him. And so that's one big one that we're looking at. We're also, another one that's been argued, we're waiting for a decision, has to do with ghost guns. Those are weapons that can be made at home. They're almost untraceable because they don't have serial numbers. And the Biden administration had put some regulations on kits that are used to put these weapons together. That's another one that was argued and is pretty closely followed. There's an e-cigarette case that has to do with flavored vapes. That's kind of an interesting one that we're watching. So there's a few others like that. That'll be interesting, significant cases, but perhaps not quite to the presidential immunity level, but certainly ones that are being closely watched.
Yes. And of course, not every term will we have overturning Roe or presidential immunity. And as you said, you highlighted three cases with big implications. Obviously, Scarametti, that's the transgender right case, ghost guns and the power of federal agencies to impose these types of regulations, and then e-cigarettes, again, going back to really the power of the administrative state. Can we dive into Scarametti for a moment? Because I think that is probably the case I'm asked about the most. And it's a state law that banned the ability of minors to obtain gender-affirming care. Could you tell us a little bit more about the case and what you heard during oral arguments?
Yeah, so of course, this case out of Tennessee, but Tennessee is not the only state with a law like this. Something like almost half of states, of course, generally conservative-controlled states, have passed similar laws. And the basic argument that they make, among others, is that, you know, there could be long-lasting effects for these treatments that minors aren't necessarily equipped to make those decisions. But of course, other folks come back on the other side and they say that this is the rights of the parents. It's the rights of the minors to access this care, and that the state shouldn't be passing out and out bans when it comes to the healthcare decisions of families and individuals. And it did seem like the justices were probably leaning towards upholding this law, though there were also some questions and concerns about parental rights. So we'll see how it comes out, what might happen next if this law is upheld by the Supreme Court.
Yeah, this parental rights issue is a big one that I heard, particularly Justice Barrett asking some questions. And I'm hoping, Lindsay, you could highlight for us, the case itself just deals with a question of equal protection, but it sounds like a separate issue dealing with basically the substantive due process rights, the liberty interests of parents to direct their child's medical care, that that could potentially come up in a later case, or at least that's what I heard, that the issue before the court in this case is equal protection. It looks like they're likely to find that there's not a violation, but maybe there's a second challenge coming based on parental rights and a different part of the 14th Amendment. Is that what you heard as well?
Yeah, I think that tracks. Of course, you're right that that was the main question they were looking at is, does this law discriminate on the basis of gender? And interestingly, of course, there was another case that involved transgender rights and discrimination in the workplace that was a victory for transgender rights and was written by Justice Neil Gorsuch. And of course, he was totally silent during oral argument. So that's unusual for him. And that will be sort of an interesting wild card here. And whether this decision in the Scrimeti case undermines that previous decision, right, that comes out later. But yes, the parental rights question could certainly be the next big thing. How that all plays out, though, I think is kind of up in the air. How the parental rights interplay might come along afterwards if the court does sign with Tennessee here. I think that's a little bit of an open question. And of course, the other open question in this case is what might happen with the new administration. The Biden administration, of course, backing the rights of the transgender youth and their families. And the Trump administration certainly appears to have a much different view on that issue. And if they do, you know, if there is some kind of change there, how does that play out and how does it affect the case, if at all? I think there are definitely a few unanswered questions that we'll be watching on this one, even after we get a decision.
Well, actually, I was going to ask you about that, which is there will be a changeover in administrations. Now, the case has obviously been argued, as you laid out. I think the Biden administration has a different view than the Trump administration will. My understanding is that the Biden administration joined, and part of the reason that this case is only about equal protection rights is because of how they joined and a statute that allowed them to join the case based on trying to vindicate equal protection rights. So will there still be the private plaintiffs who are still standing and have legal standing if the Trump administration decides to try and change course? Can you walk people through? Because I think it's such a good point that you laid out. Like, what does it mean? Does the Trump administration file a brief to the Supreme Court and say, just kidding, the Department of Justice has changed its mind? Of course, the case is argued, not decided. I think this is confusing for people. If you could maybe walk us through that.
Yeah, these are questions that are on a lot of folks' minds right now. I think that exactly what the Trump administration might do is one of those questions. They may not file formal briefs if they feel like the court's already leaning their way, but of course that, you know, that'll be up to them and what they feel like the best posture in the case is, right? But certainly the private plaintiffs that brought the case, transgender youth in Tennessee and their families, that case certainly still stands on its own. And exactly what that posture would be, since the court is considering it but hasn't made a decision, that's a little bit unclear. But those claims are separate and wouldn't necessarily be directly, you know, wouldn't go away if the Trump administration right. changes the federal government's position on it. You know, those are the things that'll be interesting to see play out here, because there's a few different issues where the Trump administration will take a different view than the Biden administration yeah. that are still in play.
And actually, what are those issues? I think people listening will want me not to gloss over that and say, which cases could the changeover in the administration in the middle of a Supreme Court term, which is what always happens, where could that make a difference?
Yeah, there are multiple cases, and exactly how those differences will ultimately play out, especially in terms of the cases that have already been argued, is not totally clear. But the Trump administration could possibly take a different view on the ghost guns case. I mean, that's one that certainly in the Second Amendment more broadly, Trump has a very different view on that than Biden does. That's one that might be possible. He I haven't seen where he's made specific comments about that specific issue, but we certainly know more broadly on the Second Amendment, he takes a very different view than Biden does. And on the e-cigarettes case, even Trump at one point promised to save flavored vapes. So his FDA could take a different view on that. Now, whether they come in on the particular case that's been argued and try and take a different position at this point, that to me, I'm not certain on that either. But certainly in terms of the broader government response, from what Trump has kind of telegraphed so far, there could be some major switches that could really change the posture of some of these issues more broadly, even if it doesn't end up being a major 90-degree switch on the cases that were already on the docket at the court.
That's really helpful for us to think about when we're thinking about all of the ways that the new administration could shake things up, that there are pending Supreme Court cases where it could make a difference. Now, we are recording this episode the day that the TikTok decision came out. I got to talk to you a little bit about this on the phone earlier today. The case in general terms is about a piece of legislation that had bipartisan support that said to ByteDance, the owner of TikTok, you either need to sell or you need to shut down. It was divest or ban is, I think, the way this has been popularly described. The legislation was challenged on First Amendment grounds. The DC Circuit upheld the legislation. There were oral arguments that occurred January 10th, and it appeared to, I think, everybody listening, like the court was going to also uphold the law. That's what they did today. My reading is that they did so based on the government saying there's a national security concern and there's a serious data privacy concern. But Lindsay, could you help us dive in a little bit more? It was a per curiam opinion. There were some concurring opinions. They kind of laid out a new standard, but maybe didn't so much. Could you help unpack that?
Yeah, this one, this will be an interesting one because typically, you know, the Supreme Court has the final say on things, but in this one, events are continuing to move, right? A sale is still possible, and Trump has talked about wanting to save TikTok. So there's lots of machinations that are happening outside the court, but they did uphold the law as it appeared they were leaning in oral arguments and basically, you know, focused on these national security concerns about the data, these kind of vast troves, as they put it, of data that TikTok collects on tens of millions of Americans, this wildly popular app. And they basically did find that those national security concerns outweighed the concerns about the First Amendment, that kind of going along with some of the government's arguments that this law doesn't impinge on anyone's free speech. It's more about the company TikTok and its corporate ownership rather than anything that's being said or done on TikTok itself. And there were a couple of concurrences where Justice Sotomayor took a little bit of issue with one part of the analysis and basically saying that, yes, it definitely does involve First Amendment rights. It should be subject to strict scrutiny, but even under that standard, it still passes muster. It's still constitutional. Justice Gorsuch's concurrence, he expressed some concerns, as he did in oral arguments, about one of the government's positions that China could potentially influence the content that's available on TikTok. He was concerned about that argument. It didn't feel like it was appropriate. I'm paraphrasing, of course, here. Had some deep concerns there, but also overall felt like the national security concerns about the data were enough to outweigh those issues, which was, of course, what the majority also based most of their decision on. But less discussion about that content moderation argument in the per curiam opinion, but Justice Gorsuch got into it a little bit more, and so we'll see what happens next in terms of TikTok and whether it does stay available in the U.S. So over 170 million people, just incredibly popular, and so if it is shut down, it would be a major thing in a lot of people's lives. I know this is one of the cases I have actually gotten my children interested in the outcome. So
that is amazing news. And can I ask, do they have an opinion like, why would you ever ban TikTok? It's just what I use to watch X. Or are they sympathetic to the concerns about data privacy.
So to be clear, they're not on TikTok. They're a little too young for it still, but they are aware of it in the world and are interested in what happens. And I would not say that they are, I would not say the national security concerns are high on their list. I would say that they would definitely be on team keep TikTok available. Even if they're not on it, I think it has a sheen of coolness, you know, yeah. among younger people. And so they would definitely want it to stick around. And I don't know that they've dived into their data privacy, tomes and research quite yet.
Fair enough. And I don't want to violate their privacy by asking them more questions about this. So instead, what I'm going to do is ask about something else we talked about, which is there were some new grants today, meaning the Supreme Court decided to take up some new cases. And there's a little bit of a pattern here that we were talking about which cases they're going to take. And these seem like some important, maybe not, you know, as big as transgender rights or ghost guns or e-cigarettes. And again, when we're talking about ghost guns and we're talking about e-cigarettes, we're also talking about the power of federal agencies. So what are the other new cases that are looming?
Probably the most interesting one, or at least most newsworthy one, let's put it that way, that was taken up today also does touch on LGBTQ rights. This has to do with parents in a Maryland school district who are concerned about the reading material with that touches on some LGBT folks and issues that's part of the curriculum at school that they can't opt out of. And so, of course, this idea of parents' rights or the concerns about parents' rights and what kids are being taught in schools, what books they're reading, really has become something that's been a major topic of conversation, especially in the last few years across the country. And so, that'll be one that touches on, again, some of these big things that we're all talking about, right? Even if it's, again, not presidential immunity, it is things that, you know, decisions about what your child is reading in school and seeing in school and how that squares with equality and issues across society are definitely things that we're all talking about around the dinner table too, right? So while this particular case might be one school district, it's things that we're all kind of thinking about too.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And these are, I would list them as the, you know, quote unquote, bigger cases that we should be looking at. So, Lindsay, I have another question, which actually doesn't have to do with any of the specific cases that the court is going to hear this term or just decided to take up, which is, we hear a lot about the court. And I think people, as they look at everything in America in 2025, tend to view it through a political lens, which makes me sad, I have to admit, in a lot of ways as a law professor, that increasingly I think we see the court and members of the court, at least some of them, as political actors. But I'm hoping for first a different question, which is, what is it like to cover the court right now? Do people come up to you and say, oh my gosh, how can you cover the court? They're illegitimate, or that's so fascinating. Tell me more about these hugely impactful decisions. Or does it depend on who you're talking to?
Yeah, I would say there's, you know, different reactions depending on who you're talking to. I think it's something that's, you know, it's such a major institution in American life, right? And it is something that I think we're talking more about now, almost like that there's just been a lot of fascination with the court, and the court in recent years has made some big decisions that have really sparked a lot of conversation and touched a lot of people's lives. On one level, that's their job and that's what they do day in and day out, right? But I think, you know, some of the really impactful ones in recent years and also some of the questions and concerns that have been raised about ethics and stuff like that, all of that has really put the court in a spotlight. And I think, of course, that's not a comfortable place to be on some of those things [S2] Yeah. [S1] for the court, but it does mean that people are talking about it and you get questions about it, right? And so you try and also both kind of give people a little bit of insight into the workings of the court and also explain some of the interesting, more esoteric details that are just not like anywhere else, right? Some explain a little bit about the process too, that you know, before anybody's eyes glaze over. It can also give people a little insight of like, no, this is how this works, and it's not quite like anywhere else, even other federal courts. And so, but I think there is a degree of fascination there, and part of it is just the level of institution, the level of really impact that the court has on people's lives too.
Well, take us inside for a second. So, what is, when you're talking to people, I guess a couple of things. One, what's something that you wish we understood about the court? And then two, and maybe this is the same thing, but covering the court, what's one thing that has surprised you?
Oh, there's so much that you would still love to know, right? I think that in this modern era, we get, the world in general gets a little more of a window onto the court, like with the streaming of audio arguments. You can hear those in a way that until really very recently you couldn't hear them, right? And so there's much more, in some ways, much more window than we've ever had before. But there's still so much that we don't see that happens behind the scenes, and a lot of that is rightly so. Not all of this is something that should be for public consumption, but you can't help but be curious about how the sausage gets made, so to speak. And so there's always always questions you have, always things you want to know. But you really do get a sense of walking into that courtroom where you still have to leave your laptop, leave your phone, even leave your Apple watches. So you have to kind of shed all those trappings of modernity, and you come in with your notebook and your papers and your pen. There is a real like sense of history and sense of, you know, awe to some level, right? Some extent of walking into that courtroom with the big columns and the red drapes, and you do get that feeling of being in the highest court in the land, and so there is that sense of respect and that stature that the court has too.
The gravitas of it all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, Lindsay, is there a common question that you get from people? Like, why don't they just, or isn't it true that, or I don't understand why? I mean, I think this is something that I tend to lose track of because I very luckily get to teach law students. And so they come in with a baseline knowledge, and I probably forget some of what people just don't know or don't understand about how the court functions.
I think, you know, one thing you hear is, especially this week with TikTok, was why don't they just give us a decision? What's going on? But you also want to say, no, this is really fast. This is really fast by court standards. And actually, having covered federal courts before, a lot of the Supreme Court decisions do get turned around more quickly than in lower courts too. And if you're thinking on a legal timeline, you know, and so yeah, some of the questions do become, well, why don't we know yet? What's going on? And in some cases, it's because that's how the process is. They're supposed to be thinking about it. You don't want it to come out too quickly. You want them to be thinking about it a little bit when you're talking about these things that really affect people's lives in a massive kind of way. And so yeah, this week it was definitely the, what's going on? Why haven't we heard anything yet?
Yeah, why didn't they just tell us what they were going to do after oral arguments like we're used to seeing? Well, Lindsay, I had such a good time talking with you. I hope you'll come back when some of the bigger decisions come out. We you know, covered everything from the nitty gritty of the Equal Protection Clause to what it's like to have to turn over your Apple Watch when you walk into oral arguments. So I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.